Welcome back to the History of South Africa podcast with me, your host, Des Latham. All manner of things are going on, and thanks first of all to the folks out there who've been sending me notes and support, much appreciated. Episode 220 deals with the start of the Transvaal Civil War, and quite a bit about Paul Kruger's early life. The American Civil War was raging in 1862, and there's nothing quite like a war to trigger innovation, if you excuse the pun. Richard Jordan Gatling patented his terrifying Gatling gun, featuring multiple rotating barrels driven by a hand crank, allowing operators to unleash a relentless hailstorm of bullets, up to several hundred rounds per minute. Its distinctive mechanical whirr echoed across battlefields, marking a chilling shift towards modern industrialized warfare. While undoubtedly efficient, the Gatling gun also embodied a grim reality. The age when technology would reshape combat forever had arrived, just in time to cause more chaos in the already bloody American Civil War. What is less known these days is that there was another civil war involving descendants of Europeans, and this was going on in South Africa. The AmaZulu had just wrapped up their own recent civil war, as you've heard. All manner of brutal and uncivil conduct marked this period in South African history, as neighbour turned against neighbour and the bonds of society frayed. The Boer republics had been riven by conflict since the days of the Voortrekkers, but in 1862, perhaps inspired in part by the American Civil War, the Boer republics went from squabbling to skirmishing. There's no proof that the carnage of the United States directly influenced South Africa, but there is proof that the Boers knew about it. Later, during the apartheid period of National Party rule, this Transvaal Civil War was deposited in historical File 13, almost expunged, because it contradicted the prevailing political ideology, where it was all the whites against all the blacks. Anything that detracted from this nationalist agenda was taboo. The modern architects of African nationalism too often reshaped the past to suit their narratives, discarding inconvenient histories into their own version of File 13. So it may come as a bit of a surprise to many to hear about this Transvaal Civil War. Compared to the carnage in America, when estimated 750,000 people died, the South African version was far less bloody. A few dozen dead and wounded, a handful of skirmishes was the real effect, which took place in what is now Gauteng, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and the Northwest Province. But at the same time as the American Civil War, which ran from 1861 to 1865. The Transvaal Civil War started in 1862 and ended in 1864. While less gory, it was emblematic of the frontier streak embedded in the first generation descendants of the Voortrekkers. When the Trekkers began setting up independency during the Great Trek of the 1830s onwards, they had divided into numerous political factions. The steady march towards this civil war began in 1859, when the Transvaal president, Martinus Wessel Pretorius, was invited by some burghers to stand for president in the Orange Free State. These were the burghers who favoured union with the Transvaal, mainly because they were nervous about the power of Basutu King Moshoeshoe I. But it also flew in the face of agreements they'd signed with the British regarding their future. Because the Transvaal Volksraad had voted against any of their leaders holding office in any other territory, they had to grant Pretorius 6 months' leave, which was kicking the legal can down the road. When Pretorius rode off into the Free State sunset, he appointed a kind of mini-me, Johannes Hermanus Grobler, as acting president. Commandant General Paul Kruger didn't like that idea, mainly because he thought the British would then terminate the St. Rivier and Orange River Conventions, which had granted both republics nominal independence. London was against the idea of the Boer Union, said Kruger. As it turned out, they were not completely against the idea, but that's another story. Pretorius was told to choose either the Free State or the Transvaal, and surprisingly, he resigned from the Transvaal. But there was plotting going on, and Stephanus Schoeman tried to use force to replace Grobler as acting president, and he was censured by the Volksraad. Willem Cornelius Janssen van der Rensburg was appointed as the new acting president of the Transvaal, and Tina Sneyman as Commandant General. An election was then set for mid-1862. Kruger was recalled from his various missions and told by the Transvaal Volksraad that he'd been selected as a possible future presidential candidate. But Kruger was in a bit of a pickle. He was a member of the extremely rigorous Dorper Church. He couldn't enter politics per se. Only Hervormde Church members could stand for political reasons. Van Rensburg then changed the Transvaal law, passing legislation that gave equal political rights to all reformed denominations of the church, including the Doppers. Now this is quite a thing. If you recall, the Volksraad had said that only Dutch Reformed Church members could be politically active, thus excluding the English, who were Catholic or Anglican or Methodist, and members of the Ehrenberger Brethren who were deemed unsuitable. According to the Constitution of the Transvaal Republic, the Hervormde Church was the state church. Its members alone were entitled to exercise any influence in public affairs. Whoever was not a member of the Hervormde Church was not a fully qualified burger. Krier belonged to the Christelijk Gereformeerde Kerk, founded recently only in 1859 by Dr. Postma in Rustenburg. This church became known in South Africa as the Dorper, or partly Canting Church. The derivation of the word Dorper is not completely clear, but it was believed to have come from the word dop, a damper or extinguisher for putting out candles. Calling a church the Canting Church, or Kantkerk, in Dutch and Afrikaans, was a way of mocking groups seen as too modern, too aligned with the English influence, or too focused on the outward show rather than pure doctrine. Some Doppers, for instance, viewed the more liberal NG Kerk, Dutch Reformed Church, as a canting church. The word canting comes from the Old English cant, meaning insincere speech or sanctimonious talk, especially about religion or morality. So when someone called a church a canting church, they meant it was full of people who talked a lot about religious virtue but didn't necessarily live by it, or who used religion as a cover for pride, politics, or control. There's a lot of canting churches around in the 21st century, aren't there? Speaking of words and meaning, dop in South Africa means cheap hooch, alcohol, and yes, the Christian doppers did dop. Drinking was not banned. For dopper church members, their favourite dop apparently was brandy. Many dopper farms produced their own alcohol. The peculiar tenets of the dopper church included a strict application of the decrees of the Synod of Dordrecht from the early 1600s, but they do share the point of view of the old Reformed churches. The members of this church were not recognized as full burghers in the old Transvaal because when the Transvaal Constitution was drafted, the Dorper Church didn't exist. So acting president Van Rensburg called a meeting of the Hervormde Church in 1862, which passed a resolution conferring equal rights on the burghers of all evangelical churches, including the Doppers. Krier was on a hunting expedition on the Crocodile River when all of this was going on, and messages were sent to call him back to Pretoria because he could now legally get more involved politically, so to speak. He rode into the city and cantered straight into the Transvaal split. President Van Rensburg with a portion of his followers, the government, and Schoeman with a number of his adherents on the other side, the rebels. As Krier writes dryly in his documents, the two parties were on hostile terms. Krier was a peacemaker and first spoke to Schoeman and his group, hoping to persuade them to come to an understanding. Eventually, all agreed to a meeting of the burghers from every part of the republic to decide what should be done. Both sides agreed to this proposal. The meeting was called at Pretoria. Hither came a mass of burghers from all parts of the republic, and it was resolved by a large majority to carry out the proposal, which had been already accepted by the Volksraad, namely that a special court should settle each separate question. That was Kruger writing in his memoirs. The separate questions were basically who should rule whom. But Schoeman didn't like that idea, sensing the Transvaal elite were going to pull a fast one, and called up all his men who gathered around Pretoria. A council of war was hastily convened by Commandant General Snyman, along with Van der Rensburg, and sentries were posted on the outskirts of Pretoria to stop Schoeman's messengers from sending for help. Things were degenerating into possible fisticuffs. Pickets were stationed at various points around Pretoria, particularly at the Arpies River, close to where Mamelodi Township is today, and near the suburb of Acadia. Mamelodi Township, by the way, draws its name from the name of the river, with the full name being Mamelodi Yatswani, meaning Whistler of the Arpies River, a nickname that was given to Paul Krier. Back to 1862 and those pickets looking out for the rebels. Well, in short, they failed. Schoeman's messengers easily eluded their fellow Boers around the Arpies River. One of the messengers rode right over one of the pickets. After this incident, General Snyman ordered that any man refusing to stop would find his horse shot out from under him. And so it was. On the same night of this order, A messenger rode towards the pickets at full speed and ignored calls to halt. The picket opened fire but missed the horse and hit the rider in the arm. Boer shooting Boer. This was the infamous first shot that set off the Transvaal Civil War. Pretoria was abuzz as Commandant General Snyman gathered his commando about him that night. All burghers were to assemble in the square with a view of seizing Schoeman the next day. But he managed to break through the ring and rode off at high speed to Potchefstroom to prepare commando in Potch for the inevitable attack by the Transvaal Boers under General Snyman and Commandant Krier. They were on their way, joined by Van Rensburg, the acting president. A bit of disinformation began to circulate, infuriating Paul Krier. Schoeman's party spread a report that Krier had only joined the Transvaal commando to compel the recognition of his own church, the Christelijke Gereformeerde Church, the Doppers, as the state church replacing the Hervormde denomination. This is an early echo of the same kind of calculated falsehoods and propaganda that still undermine trust, distort truth, and shape conflicts today when it comes to religious fundamentalism. The reason why Krier was so angry was that nothing motivated the burghers more than religion, and the rumours worked. Many Boers switched sides to join the rebels, Schoeman's team. Even in the district of Mariko, the home of many Doppers, Boers decided it was time to fight for the Hervormde denomination. Once war is draped in sacred cloth, the mind grows fevered, and even the noblest hearts are led to embrace shadows as truth. The Transvaal government's commander eventually reached the Potchefstroom River, and Van Rensburg sent a message to Schoeman calling for negotiations. Schoeman agreed and dispatched Commandant Jan Kok, together with other burghers, to serve on the commission. Krier was to lead the government negotiators. Both sides met at a halfway point between the two camps. As they sat down on the rough-hewn camp chairs, Jan Kok swiveled around and glared at Krier. "Dis gij wilt iwer kerk die staatskerk maak," or in more modern Afrikaans, "Dis jy wat wil jou kerk die staatskerk maak?" Krier responded, "Oom Jan," he said, "I need not take much trouble to contradict you. If you think a little, you must see for yourself that such a statement must be untrue. Here is the government's lager. The president and all other officers belong to the Hervormde Church." The cock sat impassively as Krier continued. "And I scarcely know whether, out of 600 men, as many as 20 belong to my church. Daarom kan wat jy zegt omtrent de kerken nie waar wees nie." Therefore, what you say about the churches cannot be true. There was bad faith going on here, so the negotiations failed. Both sides rode back to their camps to decide what to do next. The next day, the government army took one of their guns and a number of burghers under command of Paul Krier to bombard Potchefstroom from the south. Krier and his men rode off. A short while later, they set up the gun and opened fire, hitting the Potch rebels' guns with their third shot. General Schoeman and his men fired back, deploying artillery and rifles. And thus, both sides continued to fire at each other in Potch all day. As night fell, Schoeman tried to make a break from the town to the plateau on the north side. His plan was to outflank the government position. After dark, Krier himself decided to scout the high ground and from the plateau saw Schumann's commando approaching. Krier rushed down into the government camp, imploring men to follow him back to the high ground. Not a moment to lose. 20 men rushed off into the night with Krier while the rest readied themselves. But Schumann's men spotted Krier and opened fire, wounding 3 government soldiers. But Schoeman lost one man shot dead in the exchange, and he himself had been wounded. Despite losing blood, he took off on horseback to the Orange Free State with his surviving burghers, followed closely by Krier. On the way, a few of Schoeman's burghers were taken prisoner by the Transvaal government forces. They were growing tired of this madness. Schoeman made it all the way back to his farm in the Free State, from where he rallied his people. A day later, the Transvaal army crossed the Vaal into the Free State, heading towards Schoeman's farm, arresting any rebel they found. This turned into a sort of international incident. The territory of the government of the Orange Free State had been violated, but the political leaders in Bloemfontein were tired of Schoeman's lunacy. They did not object to Transvaal commandos invading their land. Bloem even sent the Kroonstad Landrost, a man by the name of Truter, to assist in arresting Schoeman's band. Yet, most of the rebels got away, retreating towards Wakkerstroom. They gathered on a farm at the junction of Eclipse Stream and Vaal River. Krieger's forces appear to be confused, at first turning north for the long ride back to Pretoria. They believed the rebels were going to strike the capital. Instead, Schoeman, ever the mobile soldier, moved again, heading off to the junction of the Loop Stream and Potchefstroom River, near another tributary called the Mooi River, not to be confused with the Mooi River in Natal. Krieger's forces figured out that Schoeman had changed direction, and the government forces eventually caught up with him there. Moments before the gunfights began, a small band of Schoeman's people rode into the government camp, among them being President Pretorius. He proposed a negotiated solution, a commission to settle the Boer differences. Trying to avoid more bloodshed, van Trensberg's government agreed and lagered about a kilometre away from Schoeman, opposite Potchefstroom, on the Mooi River. Once again, Krieger was dispatched with a group of burghers to serve on a commission, while Schoeman's party nominated President Pretorius and about a dozen others. They placed a meeting halfway between the lagers. The negotiations began with Krieger proposing that everyone should recognize the resolution of the Volksraad appointing van Rensburg acting president and entrusting the punishment of guilty rebels to a special tribunal. The major issue they all faced was who should sit as judge of this tribunal. Both sides were riven by an intense hatred and could not agree. Hours of wrangling later, the two sides eventually accepted a tribunal that it was as specified in the Transvaal Constitution. Van Rensburg summoned a special court to begin sitting immediately. Both sets of commandos accepted the terms. The members separated. The war seemed to be at an end. The next day, President Van Rensburg began proceedings. The first to be brought before the court, Andries du Toit. He was a member of the Schoeman party. The court ruled against him, guilty. Although it was comprised of equal parts government and rebels, this was enough to run the entire proceeding off the rails. Schoeman's entire party rode away. Government members left behind decided that Schoeman's party would pay all the costs of the court and the commando. Another war council was called. Paul Krieger was voted in as Commandant General. He was told to collect fines from the rebels and to bring the officers to court to account for their actions. The young Commandant General Krieger rode off with a section of the army to the Heidelberg district, where he met a Feldkornet called Rutz. Krieger managed to change Rutz's mind. He flipped to support the Transvaal government and agreed to help collect fines. Heidelberg rebel commander Jan Marais lived some distance away, and Krieger decided it was time to try and convince the influential man to leave the rebels' cause. As Krieger and his men rode off on the two-day trip to Marais' farm, they became aware of an emotional teen ahead of them, galloping on, who decided to warn the other Boers of the government's posse on its way. "Paul Krieger, come on," he yelled. "Everyone should stay out of Krieger's way because he was causing mischief," said the child. Krieger's party eventually caught up with the youngster on night two, overtaking him as he succumbed to exhaustion. Thus, Krieger reached Jan Marais' farm and convinced the rebel to ride alongside him to Pretoria. The next morning, as Krieger returned from Jan Marais' farm with the farmer, the young firebrand rode up and, thinking that Krieger's group were rebels, began to rattle off his usual speech about the bogeyman, Paul Krieger. The amused party let the youngster finish his speech. Then Krieger said, "Young man, let me give you some good advice. Do not repeat this foolish stuff any longer. Your whole party has already been guilty of quite enough disobedience against the administrative authority." Startled, the youngster asked, "Ja, maar wie is jy, oom?" "Yes, but who are you, uncle?" "Paul Krieger," came the reply. The burghers had to hold the youngster's horse steady to allow him to climb back on. He was trembling so violently. "In every limb," wrote Kruger later. With that, the youngster disappeared in a cloud of dust and a puff of terror. Even Jan Marais, the rebel commander, found the episode entertaining. As they continued on their ride from Heidelberg to Pretoria, they stopped at a farm owned by a man Krieger calls Mr. Stradom. Mr. Stradom, however, was away. Perhaps he was warned by the teenager. Mrs. Stradom knew who Jan Marais was, a supposed supporter of rebel commander Schoeman. She made a few suppositions on the spur of the moment that were incorrect. Mrs. Stradom also had no idea that the commandant in charge of these Boers was Paul Krieger. She poured some tea, then told the travellers that this upstart by the name of Kriya had been searching for her husband because he had been condemned to pay a fine of 100 rix dollars. Mrs. Stradum said her husband was on the lam and directed her wrath on this man Kriya. How dare he and the wretched government be such swines? Kriya, she said, was the ringleader in this government conspiracy. The tirade lasted half an hour. Then there was a knock at the door, and a government soldier called Jan Bankies walked in and saluted Kriya. What? You here too, General? He asked. Are you taking Maria as your prisoner? Nee, answered Kriya. Hy gaat uit eigen wil met my na die krijgsraad. No, he is going with me of his own free will to the Council of War. Forgive the slightly twisted Dutch pronunciation. A look of horror crossed Mrs. Stradum's face.
Oh, General, I did not know who you were, she said. Do not be angry at what I have said. I am so nervous by nature that I always talk to people as they talk to me to avoid all unpleasantness. I only speak like that when I think people belong to the other side. But if people of your party come, I speak quite differently. I have the cash here which my husband was fined. I can fetch it for you if the general will only take it.
Clearly she could have had a future in politics. Shortly afterwards, Kriya's party left the farmhouse without taking her money, merely waving goodbye to the crestfallen woman. Both Kriya and Marais arrived in Pretoria a day later, where it became clear that the civil war was unresolved. There was something else that was eating away at both the Free State and the Transvaal. They had not settled the question of a border yet. Things were going to get bloodier before this Transvaal civil war ended. What happened next is for episode 221. Please rate the podcast on your favourite platforms. It helps elevate visibility. You can head off to desmondlatham.blog, where I load updates about various episodes. You can email me from there too. Until next, farewell.